Hi, I'm Eric Jorgensen from the Maine Humanities Council, and I'd like to welcome you to another in our series of podcasts exploring the power and pleasure of ideas in Maine.
Blue-collar life and its collisions with white-collar life are also persistent themes in the fiction and the nonfiction of Farmington writer Bill Rohrbach. In 2001, we talked about Big Bend, a volume of short stories that won the coveted Flannery O'Connor Prize for short fiction.
In fiction, you can, imagine what could happen. I mean, with nonfiction, if I'm writing about myself in nonfiction, because I do journalism too, but if I'm writing about myself in nonfiction, I'm limited to my basically pretty good life, and my basically pretty quotidian worries and my basically pretty regular guy kind of existence. But with the fiction, I can imagine what would happen if I followed, if my civilizing influences disappeared for an afternoon or something and I followed my basest impulses.
I think that's what happens in a lot of these stories. Some characters are quite civilized and something happens in the story to shake up whatever we might call their civilizing impulses. For example, in Thanksgiving, a family gathers around a Thanksgiving table. We think things are pretty good. It's an upper middle class family. The turkey is sizzling away. And bit by bit, almost sentence by sentence, the story reveals something else is going on there.
Yeah, this is a kid in trouble, I think, how old is that character? Like, mid-20s, I guess, yeah. Or late-20s. He's at least the point of view character,
yeah.
And he's a failed artist, or failing artist, and he's sick, so...
Mentally
ill, yeah.
Yeah.
He's even on meds, or supposed to be, but I think what happened is he bought Jack Daniels instead of meds with his $16, and that led to some trouble. That leads to some trouble in the story.
He's sort of walking chaos in what is otherwise a pretty still pool when the story starts, and that happens again when a character named Dewey walks into your stories. He's sort of like, if you were in Shakespeare, he'd be, or some myth, he'd be the Lord of Misrule. He just upsets everybody's expectations, makes their lives turn around, and he never seems to really change. he's an agent of change, but he doesn't care about moving up any ladders, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Can you read us a little bit from that story? Tell us what it is and set it up a bit.
Richard Milk suspects Dewey Burke of stealing money from them, and he's probably right. And in this scene, he decides to confront Dewey. He's going to get out there and put it on the line and stop being a candy pants, as he himself might put it. So here he confronts Dewey. And of course, the narration is from Richard's point of view. So anyway, here's this. This is a story called A Job at Little Henry's, from the collection Big Bend. Dewey, you stole $45 on Tuesday and $14 on Thursday. The heck I did. Dewey stabbed the shovel into the compost and straightened, looked square at Richard. His eyes were as cold and deep and dark as the quarry ponds in Avon to which Richard and Gale had made the strenuous hike last summer with the intention of swimming. They had not swum. The place was beautiful and what one once thought of as secluded, the water clear and green and very deep, but there were too many beer cans and lots of trash and diapers and those grotesque, mud-splattered off-road trucks parked halfway up the sides of boulders for show, and too many people who look like Dewey Burke. People like Dewey everywhere, a circus of tattoos and hidden weaponry. Something firmer. Dewey, listen, you're caught. Now, if you just take a minute and think about it, you're caught. We caught you. You stole our money. Dewey, listen to me. You stole from us. The look on Dewey's face went cloudy, then black. He stepped toward Richard and swung his arm. That's what Richard saw, the arm. The tattooed fist seemed to arrive separately and too early, arrived right at Richard's nose and sent him into a vague and fuzzy time warp in which everything Dewey did seemed extremely slow and purposeful, almost inevitable, certainly unstoppable. Richard didn't fall, didn't take a fighter's stance, just put a hand to his face in amazement. Jesus, Dewey.
This podcast was brought to you by the Maine Humanities Council, with support from the National Endowment for the Humanities and friends like you. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your support.